Hey, everybody, it's Connor popping in before this brand new episode of your favorite podcast, Drama with Connor and Dylan McDowell. Because before this incredible episode with Ben Ahlers, yes, y'all, we have the Gilded Age's Clock Twink on the show. We're delivering. I mean, come on, you're gonna love it. You already love him, so you're gonna love this episode. But anyway, I ask for just a second more of your time before we get into this full-length, long-form conversational style interview that's so fun. I want to tell you about Drama Plus. That's our bonus content platform where for $5 a month, you get a couple extra episodes of Dylan and I chit-chatting away about all things theater, pop culture, love, and life. And you get added to our Instagram close friends where we spill tea, make stupid jokes. It is so worth the money. And the money goes a long way. That $5, it really helps us out to keep the pod going, to keep bringing you amazing content, amazing episodes. And we love you. Thank you so much for continuing to be on this journey with us as we enter our fifth year of podcasting. So go to patreon.com/thedramapodcast to become a member of Drama Plus and express your support. We love you. Now on to the show with Ben Ahlers.
Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to taste in
the shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more.
Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. Connor, I am so jealous. There are, not living in New York anymore, there's a few things that do make me very jealous because if there's something running, I can usually catch it eventually. But you saw Ragtime.
I know. It felt wrong not having you there with me because I feel like you would have just been sobbing, 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 sobbing next to me. I'd never seen it before, ever. I've only heard like three songs from it, which is
And I
crazy.
literally played them for you last time I was in the city because I had new music stuck in my head.
I know. And then you were like, wait, I'm gonna sob when you had to turn it off.
That's true.
Dylan, it was so good. It
It's
was
soul-stirring music, right?
and also to see it like days after the election when we're feeling some type of way about America, I was like, if they don't decide to move this to Broadway, I feel like it is such a missed opportunity. Like, we got to get some smart, savvy producers in there who are like acting on the moment, bringing this incredible cast over to Broadway. Like,
Oh yeah, stacked cast.
I mean, Joshua Henry, he's giving a performance of a lifetime.
I know I said this on a bonus episode that we recorded, but someone wrote there's something so personal about the way Joshua Henry cries when he sings, and I could not agree more. Like just the way that the tears flow and he's able to still kind of keep everything else together.
Oh my
Ah,
God.
he's a genius.
He's beyond. There was like four standing ovations. Casey Levy, Ben Levi Ross, Brandy Uranoi. I mean, the whole cast was beyond. Like Stephanie Stiles getting to do some fun stuff. Oh
Love
my
her,
God. It
love her.
was fantastic. I know, I'm so sad you missed it, but hopefully it moves to Broadway. It was nice to be in the theater. Like, I think I saw it Thursday of the week of the election. And
Oh, so things were feeling a little
it
fresh.
was a cathartic experience. Me and my friend were walking out and we were like, oh my God, the crowd who saw it last weekend probably got a more hopeful version of the show. And the person behind us goes, yeah, well, we got the more true version. We were like,
Oh, yeah.
whoa. Yeah, I
Yeah, you mentioned
know.
that to me. That's really cool, but also, art meets the moment. That's sort of the way that it is.
It does. Times are tough. Feeling bleak.
Yeah, but I'm glad we have this place to talk and like have an outlet to still uplift joy and good things that are going on in the world. Speaking of limited runs of things that are happening in New York, there's something very exciting coming up at the end of this month and early December, and we have one of the stars
Oh, yeah.
of this play, Tender Napalm, which I was reading all about it and I was like gagged by the description, just the way the reviews of it when it played in London. I feel like this is like also gonna really tie in to Meet the Moment. We'll talk to the star about it right now, but like
Oh, I mean, as soon as that IG collab post dropped, I was like, we're emailing the press team. We're getting the clock twink from the Gilded Age on the pod. Like, it was a no-brainer. A no-brainer, no-brainer.
I know.
But Dylan, I'm so excited. I can't
Yeah.
wait to talk to him and get to know him.
Our guest today is the it boy of stage and screen. He's on the brink of his off-Broadway starring turn in Tender Napalm opposite Victoria Pedretti, a theater lab in NYC. He is best known for his breakout role in HBO's Emmy-nominated The Gilded Age, where he stars as Jack Trotter, the earnest and humble footman with a love of clocks. As part of the ensemble cast, he was recognized with a SAG Award nomination last season of Outstanding Performance by an Ensemble in a Drama Series. You'll recognize our guest from his other television roles in The Village on NBC, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, Instinct, and When the Streetlights Go On, opposite Queen Latifah, my queen, and Tony Hale. Stage credits include The Closet with Matthew Broderick at Williamstown Theater Festival, Roberto Aguirre Sacasa's Good Boys at the Pasadena Playhouse, and more. Coming up at Baltimore Center Stage, he'll play the titular role in John Wilkes Booth, One Night Only, a new play written by Mad Men creator Matthew Weiner. He is a lifetime member of the Actors Studio, and we know you're already obsessed. Please, welcome to Drama,
Ben Ollers!
Yo, yo. What's up? I'm blushing. I'm blushing. That intro was so nice. Thank you.
What was it that gotcha?
I'm so glad that the clock twink has made its way to Ohio.
All the way here. You know, you're popular on these city streets.
I feel so seen, you know?
The clock twink is in the living rooms of Americans everywhere. I'm telling you that.
I know that there's tea at the end of this episode, but there's more to come. But I hate to burst the bubble that I'm not a twink. I'm actually very tall. And I don't know why that doesn't come across on screen, but I'm very flattered that my youthful disposition makes people think that.
Do you see the tweets about clock twink?
A few of them get sent to me. Yes, I tried largely to avoid social media in that regard, but it's kind of impossible not to at a certain point.
They're all positive. I'll tell you that. They are all positive. Okay. The people love the clock twink.
Yeah. Sometimes when I'm on the subway, I'll just have someone down the way just double take. They'll give me a thumbs up and mouth the clock twink. It's very, very humbling. I didn't know I was able to cut through culture like that, you know?
I do see the blush on your cheeks. It's very endearing.
Oh, thank you.
Speaking of the subway, I did once see you on the platform. I was on my way to getting a haircut in Williamsburg because, you know, despite living in Ohio, I still have my guy who cuts my hair in New York for when I'm...
You got to do what you got to do.
And so I saw you and I was taken aback at how tall you were. I was one of those people who was a little thrown.
I would venture to say I may be the tallest person on the show.
Wow.
But I don't know what the perspective shifts must... I don't know. I just look 5'6" and really happy to be here. You know,
how tall are you?
6'3".
This is tall.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I am 5'6", so I understand that that Dylan's 5'6" as well. But
yeah. I think that we need to just kind of check in with you right now, Ben. Are you well?
I am well. I'd say I'm well. It's been a crazy couple weeks, you know, a crazy few months for all of us, I'd say. But being in rehearsal for the first time for a theater piece since before the pandemic, I've had to kind of get the self-care routine online. So I've been very focused on regulating my nervous system. So it all kind of coalesced at the right time to learn at what time of night to turn off social media and how productive, another check into the news would be and take my Epsom salt baths and meditate and all that. So generally I'm okay. Just, pretty tired, but happy to be here.
Aww. Oh, we're so happy to have you here. I was reading your bio, doing all this deep dive into your whole career. Is this also your New York stage debut?
Yes. Well, I'm from Northwest Iowa, kind of in the middle of nowhere, called Fort Dodge. And I got involved with an organization called the Broadway Dreams Foundation when I was in high school. And that was really my starting place to find any inroad into the industry. And I would come out here every once in a while for their kind of end of the year galas. That was in a previous life. I would consider this, yes, my New York stage debut for sure.
Okay. Well, young Ben is proud of you.
Young Ben was singing doo-wop behind Billy Porter at a gala. And so I think he'd be pretty gobsmacked to see what's going on now.
I'm excited for you. Wait, so tell us about Tender Napalm.
Tender Napalm is a play by one of my favorite playwrights named Philip Ridley. He started the In Your Face theater movement in the early 1990s. At the time, London theater, these were his words, was very sitcom-y. There's a lot of families talking about stuff. They were either very political or very, you know, farcical, but it was always very logical and very self-contained. And Philip believes that life is far more surreal and absurd, and he didn't see that reflected in the work. And so he came onto the scene with a play called The Pitchfork Disney, which I'm not sure what theater it started in, but it's this ridiculous story about these two 28-year-olds who basically froze in time at 12 and sit in their basement and eat chocolate and stare out at a world that's ended. And this man named Cosmo Disney comes and shakes up their life, and he has a 7-foot man in a gimp costume with him. And absurdity ensues. And that's actually what launched a lot of the Jez Butterworth stuff in the 90s. That's what Tarantino points to Philip Ridley as inspiring the gimp in Pulp Fiction,
Oh my
and
gosh.
was always very provocative. There was the mainstream establishment theater crowd of London at the time didn't really respond to it, but young people really did. And so he built this youthful cult-like following and then continued that in all of his work since. And actually, Tender Napalm, I would say, is one of the softer plays that he's ever written, but it's still a very poetic and surreal and visceral, thorny depiction of these two lovers who have gone through an unimaginable tragedy. And it's about the stories that they tell themselves to both escape that tragedy as well as process it. And Philip wrote a beautiful blurb that's in the article that came out a couple of weeks ago. And he just said, Tender Napalm is about love and how we find it and how we save it in an increasingly terrifying world.
Ooh.
And so it's been really a beautiful process with a dear friend in Victoria and Rory McGregor, our brilliant director, to be able to funnel all of this angst and excess energy into something real and beautiful. And it's a lot of noise at the moment.
I'll bet. Sounds like Ridley's work kind of maybe ushered in a movement, because I don't view, especially London theater at all, as being sitcom-y. Like it's, I in fact, I think people think it's maybe too serious at times. With like British plays and even British films. So it's interesting that his impact has sort of had ripple effects.
And it's the envy of the world, the London theater scene, where you get to see such a diverse array of theater at such an affordable price point. And that's something that's really important to us as well. We're self-producing this, so it's definitely an effort to, again, express something into the theater conversation that we want to see and don't get to see enough of, as well as try to continue to weave it more into the cultural fabric of the city and to grow the younger audiences who may not be able to afford a ticket uptown. There has to be a place for both. And we're hoping that, it's a 60-seat theater at Theater Lab. It's so intimate, and the audience is certainly going to be a part of the conversation of the piece. And it's affordable, compared to a lot of what's going on out there. So we're hoping that people feel that excitement for such a limited run.
Oh, totally. I feel like it's hitting at the perfect time, too. I think it's going to be a special experience.
Yeah, we hope so. We hope so. We're very, very proud of it, and we're very humbled by it. It's a beast of a play. I don't think I've ever, I've been so blessed with Gilded Age over the last 4 or 5 years, especially with the pandemic and the strike. There's a lot of industry shakeup right now, as you two both surely know. And so it's been so nice to have that home, but also it's such a diversion from Jack Trotter. And it's requiring so much more of me than I've ever had to do before. But also, I'm learning more about myself just as I'm growing up into a younger adult. So it all feels very kismet at the moment.
Oh, that's so exciting. Is it a two-hander?
Yeah,
Just you and Victoria?
just the two of us.
Wow.
Just the two of us in storytelling, man, which is a great lift. And again, like, I love Mark Rylance and all those RSC plays that he did. And there's just something about when the storytelling's right and you really have to listen. I think that's where that magic happens between, because it is a dialogue, right?
100%.
So
How did you get involved with it?
I met Rory McGregor at the opening of Lehman Trilogy in LA in 2021 or 22, because he's a Sam Mendes's associate director on that. And he and I really hit it off. I was coming from a musical theater background at Michigan. But even while at school, I always had an affinity for and a pull towards the weirder aspects of the art form and of myself. I think we're all very complex, and I want more of that weird in a very curated society we live in right now. And he and I really overlapped on that aesthetic theatrically. And I also, at the same time, was finding many of my colleagues, many of whom have been working quite a bit, wanting to find that home, of a workspace to just come in and read plays and stretch, because there isn't that like rich backbone of an off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway scene as much as it was in the 90s, when Philip was coming up. But also, there were so many theater groups in New York at the time, whether it was Naked Angels or there's a theater department with Cynthia Nixon. What was that called? Drama department.
I love the name. I have to just
Yeah,
Brahma.
on the pulse.
Yeah.
And I wanted to provide that space. I'm a lifetime member of the Actors Studio, and that space has been very nourishing for me. I was a type A kid in high school who was, on the student council and was happy to organize. So I just started, bringing people together for the love of the game at first, but then soon certain pieces started popping to us saying, "Yo, this has to be. We have to get this made." And so right now we want this to be kind of a calling card, a bit of a proof of concept for an aesthetic of theater that we hope to be able to continue to bring once this one's done. So it was very organic, and Victoria was very aligned with that creative impulse as well. And she and I have known each other for years, and she's the most talented actress I've ever seen. She's just remarkable. And
She's so empathetic in all of her performances.
yes, and it draws that empathy out of you as her partner, whether that's in, just in the personal friendship that I have with her, but also on stage. It's a very infectious standard that she sets for being alive and then being an open, porous human being. And that's also been a really exciting arena to step into, where you go, oh, you're gonna be exposed. You're gonna have to. There's types of acting sometimes where you're kind of using your tricks and your in the masks and kind of gripping your way through a piece. And then there's also just responding genuinely to the force of another human being. And it feels like that's what's happening right now in the rehearsal process. And it's very exciting.
Ooh, I love it.
That feels vulnerable too, though. I mean, that's a lot.
Totally, totally. You have a good art, you can really fall flat on your face if you're at the edge of and willing to take that risk. But when you're with the right people, it's actually a really thrilling tightrope, a very safe, especially in rehearsal, a very safe space to try things out and keep shifting. And because it's just the two of us, we have a lot of room to create.
Now, are we talking like straight through, no intermission? Are we talking act break?
85 minutes,
Oh.
it starts and then it's rolling. Yeah, I think even in the log line, it's like, what is this thing, dot dot dot, called love? Just wraps you into this imaginative hurricane of different mythology around sea serpents and unicorns and UFOs, and all of it is somehow so palatable and so accessible, even though there's nothing but our storytelling to bring you into that world. And so, yeah, once the train starts, it's not going to stop.
Oh, I love it. I mean, and
Amazing.
music to an audience member's ears these days is like 90 minutes or less, no intermission. So obsessed.
That said, though, I am a big Jez Butterworth fan. I saw The Ferryman 4 times. I've seen Stereophonic twice, and I'm going to have to see it a third time now because my dear friend, a Gilded Age alum, Amy Forsyth, is playing the lead.
Oh my gosh.
Oh. And what I'm so excited by was I felt like this other part of my brain being watered. When the material's right and when there's truth on stage, I'm willing to be there for 7 hours,
Yeah.
You're speaking to something very truthful, because Connor and I also, we were two timers at Ferryman. I've seen Stereophonic twice. You've got to see Hills of California
Yeah.
if you have the
I
chance.
saw it in London.
Okay,
Okay.
good, good, good. Well, it's different now, Different.
apparently. They've changed the
Did you hear
ending.
this?
I did not know they changed it.
The third act has
No spoilers,
no
obviously,
spoilers, but
but yeah.
something that changes the entire ending of the show has been revised for this Broadway version.
I definitely think if you can see it, I know it's kind of butting up during when your run is happening,
True.
but no, I totally agree with you. If when you said it waters something, I think that's true. I feel that way about movies too. Sometimes it's like you don't even realize the time is flying by and it's so essential. So.
My favorite writer is David Foster Wallace, and tragically killed himself in 2008. And he, in the late 90s, early 2000s, he was speaking to the, because he was a TV addict, he was speaking to this inability to sit with stillness. And I think in this current time of such radical change on the collective level, but also on the personal level, it's really, really important to be able to like just sit in something. And that's what I'm hoping that people feel. And with our play, as well as, even though it's a 90-minute container, we go pretty deep. There's some real life stuff happening on there in there. And I think that's what I love so much about the theater, is it's that collective space to witness each other. I'm very optimistic that was, whether it's with indie films right now, there's new buzz around maybe we can have like more indie films and break up the bigger $300 million movies and just start smaller stories, or right with this kind of like new theater movement that you see of these this really radically diverse diet of affordable off-Broadway options that I think people are going to feel that part of their brain come online, and that it is a foundational element to your own genius, right? You have to be bored enough to want to play the piano. You have to be bored enough to want to write that short story. And I think that brain rot of the internet is eventually you end up reaching a bottom. And you start to go back to being, okay with longer form, heavier lifts as an audience member,
Sure. Wait, as an aside, David Foster Wallace, his commencement speech, that this is water. Have you heard that or read that or anything? Oh, that is a sobering thing that every couple of years comes back into my life. And if any listeners haven't ever checked it out, there's a cool video of it on YouTube that's like set to like animation and whatnot. And it's very powerful.
Yeah, thank you for that reminder. I'll listen to that after this.
Now, Ben, I'm curious where this love for the arts came from. We do have genuinely, and also because it's a segment on our show, I'm gonna ask you about this Ring of Keys moment that you may have had at some point in your life where maybe you were taking in art, participating in art, and that light switch went on and you were like, oh my God, I connect with this. I need to be involved in this. Do you feel like you can pinpoint a Ring of Keys moment?
There are so many moments in your life, I think, that develops you as an artist. I mean, I could point to the, if we're talking the earliest, I think there's probably, let me speak to two. My mom was a community theater actress, and she would bring me to rehearsals instead of paying for a babysitter. And I was in Oliver as a young pickpocket, and I forget which character she was playing. She was in the adult ensemble, and then I definitely got involved just trying to be like my mom. She had the most beautiful voice, and I watched her and all these other adults just transform. And I was like, "What? You get to do this as an adult? It's not all just, both my parents were lawyers too, so it's not just like you wear a monkey suit and go to a 9 to 5 every day. Like there's room for a fluidity. I'm so hooked. We ended up doing Beauty and the Beast together. She was Belle and I was Chip, and
Oh.
we did To Kill a Mockingbird together, and that was the first time that it, like, in my community, which had a very distinct racial divide at the time, that many of the community leaders on both sides of that divide were trying to heal. And so To Kill a Mockingbird, like, actually impacted a town of 25,000 people.
Wow.
And that felt so, I went, oh, so that was a key moment. I was like, oh, so I can do that too. But I would lump most of my childhood and into high school as, it was a place of belonging. It was a place of a lot of love from the audience, and feeling like you can step into those heroes that I may not have felt like when I was a young child. But then when I was in high school, this would be the second real moment. But I was in high school, and I was in love with a girl named Sarah, and she was an incredible singer. And our school was doing Thoroughly Modern Millie. And I had never played a lead in a musical. And I auditioned and I got Jimmy, and she was Millie. And of course, we ended up dating for 3 years after that. I mean,
Ooh, showmance.
yeah, such a textbook showman. I'd just gotten Twitter, and I just fell in love with Gavin Creel's voice in prep for this show. And I tweeted at him. I was like, "Hey man, I'm playing Jimmy in Thoroughly Modern Millie in Fort Dodge, Iowa, and I was just wondering if you had any advice for a young kid trying to do this." And he said, "Keep the pace snappy and you'll be aces," he tweeted back,
Wow.
which is a great note in general. Most of your problems can be fixed with pace. And at the time too, my young lost baritone voice had to opt down at the end of What Do I Need With Love, which was really hilarious. I became a Frank Sinatra crooner. And then to be able to go to Michigan and meet Gavin as a college student. And he was involved quite a bit in the department. And Gavin was, again, so porous and so open, and was speaking about art as an expression of a very singular instrument inside each of us. And that's when it started to shift from, I want to learn how to sing a high G and do a triple pirouette and create this version of myself to be able to be, an Aaron Tveit or a Hugh Jackman. It was, no, what are you? What's your specific offering? And I'm still on that journey, but Gavin was very instrumental in inspiring that in each of us as young students at Michigan. And so for him to have passed so recently, kind of at the same time of really trying to put my foot forward with the type of art that I want to create, it was great fuel to reconnect with him in my memories over the last after the last couple of months.
Yeah, well, I'll bet. I mean, yeah, he was a special one.
And ubiquitously, like
Yeah.
across the board.
Yes. So you said you're from Iowa and then Michigan. Were you like looking at theater schools as you were like discovering your talent through high school? Or I guess I'm curious about like what made you decide, like, oh, I'm gonna do this for a living.
Yeah, that was a weird one because I liked school and I came from a very, my parents were both lawyers and I was actually also going to maybe play college football. I was a
Oh,
football
wow.
player in high school, very involved in athletics, just kind of like checking all of the boxes. And so I was like, yeah, we'll go get a business degree and move to Chicago and start a life and have a family or whatever.
Yeah. I love that your school let you do both. That's awesome.
Yeah, I was very, very lucky. I had some incredible music teachers, and my athletic coaches were surprisingly gracious to let me, miss practice for a choir concert or
Yeah, that's cool.
be doing double duty tennis tournaments and musical rehearsal. But we were just such a small town that if you had the ability, you had to do as much as you could in order for the, just for the numbers.
Sure. Yeah.
But I had done the Broadway Dreams Foundation when I was 15 in Omaha, Nebraska. And that week, the Broadway Dreams Foundation brings some Broadway performers to smaller markets around the country. And you take classes and you rehearse for this just kind of concert thing at the end of the week. And again, that was similar to the Gavin tweet. That was just the first time I had been up close and personal with people who were actually doing this. New York and LA didn't feel like real places. They just felt like these mythological fantasy worlds where, Tom Hanks was not a person. He was just somebody who like popped up on my TV screen, right?
Yeah.
There was such a distance to it, and so to see it so directly was pretty profound. And Rachel Hoffman from Telsey came to Omaha, and I sang for her at the end of the week for this, little open casting feedback session with a New York casting director. She had said, "People do this for a living, and I think you should consider it." And I was like, "What? You just moved to New York? You Annie it? Star to be just $3 two bags?"
Yeah.
And she said, "No, people go to school." And she had gone to the University of Michigan, and we kept in touch over the next few years. And I was still, maybe I'll go to law school, maybe I'll do this. But there was just this thing in the back of my mind where I was like, I don't feel there's only one place where I feel electric and where life makes sense and where I feel so connected to myself and to other people, and it's when I'm singing and sharing space artistically. So I think I just, I think I just make this leap. And my parents, God bless them, they had no idea what they were letting me sign up for, but they did, which is also very rare from that part of the country. And then, yeah, the rest of it just kind of one thing led to another after that.
That's really awesome that they were supportive, even if it wasn't their wheelhouse per se. And then you obviously went to our rival college, University of Michigan.
Tough to process, but I support you.
Were you able to still enjoy all of like the football games and everything, even though you were in the musical theater department? Because I know that was one of our favorite aspects of OSU.
Absolutely. That was one of the primary reasons for going, other than, my idol Gavin Creel was there, as well as, just the department speaks for itself. But I wanted my dream was to go to a really big school really far away, and so that's what I did. I don't know if it's just an ADD or a general zest for life, but like I do love is I love so there's so many different parts of me that I like to explore. Part of it might just be like an anti-establishment, like you don't know me, so I'm just gonna be as different as I can be. But yeah, the football games were huge. I spent a couple summers there. I was a waiter at the restaurants and got involved with, the environmental majors and trying to fight climate change. And I taught at the high school. I directed one of the musicals. I was an Ann Arbor boy.
I love it.
Gosh, yeah. I dated a girl from Ohio at the time, and she and so I'm very familiar with it's a great state.
Yeah, we're from Cleveland originally. I've spent most of our adult years in Columbus, where I'm at now, but I appreciate you cutting a little slack.
I'm a bridge builder. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's enough tribalism in this world.
And you're trying to save it too with this climate action. I mean, I'm impressed. You do contain multitudes, Ben. This is amazing. Well, we've got to talk about the Gilded Age. It's probably one of my favorite shows. I consume it like candy the minute every new episode comes out. I wish it was a soap opera that aired daily. And Connor and I were huge Downton people, us and our parents. We loved watching that. How did you get cast on this show? Was it pre-pandemic?
Yeah, it was 2019. I left school a little early and did a play at the Williamstown Theater Festival in 2018. And Adam Caldwell from Telsey and Company had cast me in that.
You're a dropout.
I did graduate.
I was going to be like, whoa, this anti-establishment dude lives up to his the legend that he's laying out before us. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I still had to answer to my mom and dad at the end of the day.
But so you left school to go to Williamstown, which sounds so actory.
It was so actory. I loved it. I was living my dreams. I wore a leather jacket and smoked cigarettes for no reason. I'm not supporting that disclaimer. It was
Obsessed.
a vibe.
It was such a vibe. You know, the shoulders that you stand on being a part of that festival was so evident. They've named the sandwiches in the deli downtown. It's impossible to escape. And it was the coolest intro to, you know, it was my first equity job. And I was playing Matthew Broderick's son in a play.
Oh
And
my
you know,
gosh.
like Ferris Bueller was my movie growing up, and my dad came and we would watch movies late at night. He's now next to Ferris Bueller. It was a crazy summer.
Aw.
But Adam was casting the Gilded Age, and I had just finished a job out at the Pasadena Playhouse, and I was up in Vancouver for the Quibi show. Send a prayer up for Quibi.
Can on the wind right there.
And I auditioned it in my hotel room via self-tape. Then went back to New York, and there were a couple more rounds. The funny thing about that audition process was Louisa Jacobson and I did a show at Williamstown that summer of 2018. I had written her this letter, and I said, "Hey, like, I feel so lucky to witness this first step of what I know will be an incredible career, and I'm going to be rooting you on the whole time, and Godspeed, and I'll be seeing you on the way." And then I get the script for Gilded Age, and I hadn't spoken to her in a year and a half. And I texted her and I said, "Hey, look, I'm reading the script, and there's a part in here that I feel you'd be so right for. You have to go out for it. It's Marion in the Gilded Age with Julian Fellowes." And she texts back and she goes, "Benny, I'm in final callbacks for it right now. I'm about to head into the room."
My goodness.
And so it's been so special now to grow up together through this show. But yeah, we got that job in the fall of 2019, and then we were about 3 days away from starting in March of 2020, and then something happened. I forget.
Yeah. Brutal.
And then we've been rolling with it since. Yeah,
And season three is coming in hot.
season three is coming in hot. Yeah, I think we really, really. I'd be curious to hear what y'all think, but I think season one, because there's so much context to set. Like, you don't know who any of these people are, and it's such a wide and diverse cast that you gotta really set the stage. And I feel like season two starts to really cook, and season three is just a continuation of that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, can you tease anything at all about what Jack's up to in season three?
I would say it's time for him to make a man of himself.
Okay.
You know, to use a clock analogy.
I was gonna say I wasn't sure if it was intentional or not, but very well done.
Yeah. TikTok, you know?
And you even get a lot of scenes with Louisa, and at least you had it up till this point.
Yeah. Her and Harry Richardson's a dear buddy of mine. We all got super, super close because the pandemic kind of just dropped us into this COVID bubble. And so, it's also, you know, we're shooting season three, but we got the job in the fall of 2019. So it's been a few years. You know, we've witnessed a lot of change in each other, and so it's so cool to watch these characters change alongside us too. I feel like Jack has been the greatest blessing in my life. You know, to be able to embody such an optimistic, entrepreneurial, forward-thinking person in a time where, you know, there's a lot of change and that can get quite overwhelming. He just has this lightness and this ease, but also this work ethic that started, I hope, you know, has rubbed off on me and continues to fuel me in both in the show and off.
Oh,
So.
I love to hear that. Oh my gosh. I mean, Julian Fellowes is such a genius. And what I love about Downton Abbey and Gilded Age is you could easily fall into like tropes with the characters, like, oh, this character is sort of the surrogate for this in each version. But I do feel like everything is so fresh and unique with Gilded Age that it really keeps it all moving. And I mean, I think you mentioned this earlier, like 22, regular cast members.
It's massive. It's massive. You have two houses to cover, the upstairs, downstairs. Then you have all of New York society. And then you have Danae Benton and Audrey McDonald and John Douglas Thompson. I mean, this whole other aspect of American history that no one has ever written about. And to do it at the same size, both on HBO, but also amidst this epic of, you know, the railroad money coming to take over New York. The fact that they're able to hold all of that in eight episodes, I think, is an enormous testament to Julian and and Sonia and the whole producing team. It's I feel so blessed. Because also the momentum just kind of carries you, you know, like I'm not trying to, you know, diminish each of our individual contributions to the show, but the writing is so good. You just let that train roll, you know. He has such a wit to him that is unmatched, and he's able to weave these stories so cleanly into each other where just a look can propel your story forward.
Oh, you're getting me so excited.
Yeah.
I need the Russells to be all right. I need them to resolve. I mean, I hope everything's going to be okay. I worry at night.
But it's that tension that we love them for, no?
True. Very true. Very true. I mean, I've always loved Carrie Coon, but is his name Morgan?
Morgan Spector. Yeah.
Very attracted to him. I mean, he really, I think we all are obsessed with him. He's kind of America's daddy when we're watching The Gilded
Age. He has stepped into the railroad daddy moment. So
railroad daddy. Wait, okay. If you can't answer this, don't. But did you get to film with anybody new this season that you hadn't in past years that you'd been like, oh my God, this is our first scene together?
I'm trying to think, because fortunately for me, just on the Ben side of things, I get to pour tea,
right?
And
yeah.
And serve, you know, roasted chicken to so many different people. I get to spend time on set with Nathan Lane and Robert Sean Leonard and Kelly, of course. And
yeah.
So I actually, because they host so much, I've actually interacted with almost everybody. I'm trying to think. I mean, other than maybe Christine Baranski, you know, Ben Aller's spinoff.
Which we all want.
Yeah, you can run with that rumor.
Come on, Who Weekly.
Yeah. No, I've been spoiled over the last couple of seasons. I've gotten to work with just about everybody.
And I saw like a press release of a bunch of new cast members, a lot of Broadway favorites, Kate Baldwin, other people like that are joining, Victoria Clark joining the cast. So
Dylan Baker, the great Jordan Danica.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. He and I have been crossing paths over the years. So I got to see him a couple times, and that's been really, really cool. He's a one of a kind guy.
I love it.
Not to change the subject, but I'm going to. Tell me a little bit about John Wilkes Booth, One Night Only. Oh. Are you guys like jumping on the O. Mary Abraham Lincoln interest train here?
Yeah, I don't know if there's just like the same kind of impulse from the collective unconscious or what, but it is not the same conversation as O. Mary. I just want to set those expectations correctly. No one could ever touch what Cole's done. Matthew Weiner, he's making his playwriting debut. I did a reading of it summer 23 with my dear friend Stevie Walker Webb, who had just come fresh off the Ain't No Mo.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant director. He has such a sense of play. And in a lot of his work, there's just a twist and a freshness to everything that he does. And he and I have worked on things in the past. We're writing partners on a project and are just soulmates in a lot of ways. And he just took over the Baltimore Center stage and to make his own little corner to really create the type of work that he wants to. We did the reading at the Players Club near Gramercy Park, which Edwin Booth, John Wilkes Booth's brother, started.
Oh.
And you weren't even allowed to mention John's name in that club. It's the first actors club. Because these guys, the Booths were, you know, the Barrymores, the Derns of the 1800s, right?
Hence the Booth Theater on Broadway.
Exactly.
The McDowells. I mean, it just goes on and on, you know.
Absolutely. And we had to ask, there was some caretaker there who helped us ask for John's permission, because apparently John haunts the Players Club.
Oh, wow.
Stop. That's so cool.
And he loved it. He loves, he's like all artists. He's like, you're talking about me? And we did the reading there, and now we're going to do it in the spring. I'm really excited. Going on like 3 months of facial hair growth right now. So fingers crossed by April, I can.
You'll get there. This is 3 months.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I was going to say, we might need to delay the play a little longer, the reading, but
I feel like if I just think hard enough, I might be able to grow facial hair. If I just like really think on it. But yeah, we're going to do that in April. And then hopefully there's a life after for that. But it's cool to be able to stare at the face of evil. I mean, he's the villain. He's the greatest villain in American history. And just as I heard you guys talking about Ragtime, I saw it on Saturday. So Dylan, we could spend the next hour talking about it, Connor, if you want to. But there is something so necessary about staring at the past. That's what Gilded Age does so well, is It's all just cycles, but the progress machines continues to move forward, and I think we can learn a lot. So I'm excited to be able to offer that, especially in this moment again.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for you. And it feels crazy to hear that that's Matthew Weiner's playwriting debut. I mean, I view much of Mad Men to have been a play, you know,
Totally.
so it feels like a perfect fit.
You know, we talked about you have this theatrical background, and a lot of people know you from your TV work, and obviously soon from Tender Napalm. But your singing voice is so rich and so beautiful. I cannot wait until we get you in something where you get to sing. Oh my God. I hope that's what you do next, not to like plot out your career for you.
Thank you. I've been thinking about that a lot. I do really miss that part of my identity. You know, it's what got me started. And even when I stopped doing theater when I was like in middle school, I would always sing. I was always singing in choir and I was singing at church. And my mom, again, had the most beautiful voice. But there was, I think when I got to Michigan, I was around these vocal gymnasts. You know, we don't, the writing in the modern musical theater canon is a very distinctly pop, burn the house down
Yeah.
thing. And I got overwhelmed by not feeling like I fit there. And it pushed me in a productive direction. You know, I still continued to find my sea legs artistically, but I did feel like I was trying to manipulate my instrument to fit shoes that had already been built, rather than knowing exactly what my voice was. And so I'm writing a lot of music just for my own enjoyment and enrichment, but I'll do some developmental stuff here and there, and I do get that buzz, you know. So it's I'm very, very excited for the right fit, because yeah, I don't know how many people know of my singing voice, so it's nice to kind of have that in the back pocket.
Yeah, it's a fun party trick for sure. When you're singing in the shower, when you're walking around the house singing, who are the artists that you love?
Oh, that's a good question. I sing a lot of Maggie Rogers. I've been singing a lot of Maggie Rogers lately.
Love,
Connor's a
love,
Maggie Stan.
love, 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 love. Do you love her new one in the living room?
Yes,
So good.
yes. And she continues to push her own boundaries, but also speaks so universally and with such care. I think I just think the world of her. I like to si I've been singing a lot of Carousel lately. Speaking of Joshua Henry,
Yes.
yeah, I've been singing "If I Loved You" probably once a day for the last week.
Sounds like you're in love.
I am in love. I'm in love with a beautiful, beautiful girl from Norway.
Wait, really?
Yeah, yeah, we.
Oh my God.
Sorry, Laura. We've been together for like 1 year and 8 months, so I wouldn't be. I'm not speaking out of turn. This wouldn't like ruin
Oh
my chances with her. I was like, I met her yesterday. I'm so in love.
No, we've had people on the podcast be like, you know, just started dating somebody. It's going well.
And then it's like here forever
Yeah.
on the thing, and we're like, ah,
Totally.
wait, I'm so happy for you.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's been the greatest roots to a very, you know, there's just so much going. Life moves so fast in America, but also in this industry, it's just kind of these little moments, right? Like Tender Napalm is such a moment right now, but in 4 weeks, you know, it'll be in the rear view for at least in this iteration. And so to have that constant has been the greatest blessing. I think if you want to take the risks that you want to artistically, you have to have a stable home life, or else your home life becomes your art and it just takes up all your energy.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, she's the greatest.
Is she in Norway or is she in the States?
That's a longer conversation, but yes,
Okay,
she's in
okay.
Norway. It's not the easiest
Yeah.
situation.
As an actor, you're busy anyways, so it's, you know, I'm sure you have to be very intentional
Yeah, that's the
in
thing. And I
general.
love Norway. It's a great culture. She loves New York when she's here, and we're angling for a complete, you know, venture in the in spring. So just right in
Awesome.
time for whatever's ahead.
Yes. Oh my God. I'm so happy for you. Well, before we say goodbye, we do like to end on a dose of drama. This is just a quick little, you know, moment to get something off your chest. It could be something you want to recommend, something you want to rant about. I want to just really quickly share a recommendation. I know I did reference the David Foster Wallace thing earlier. I am going to be appearing on another podcast soon talking about the movie Dogfight. I don't know if anybody's ever seen it. It's a 1991 rom-com sort of indie film starring one of my favorite actors of all time, River Phoenix, as well as a modern scream queen, Lily Taylor. If anyone has not seen this movie, it is like so sweet and also kind of messed up, but like really well done in a sensitive way. It has like one of the most awkward yet interesting like sex scenes of all time. Have you ever seen the movie, Ben?
I haven't, but I sang it in school. I do need to see it. Yeah.
It's great. It's only like 90 minutes. You know, speaking of another, you
Oh.
know, it's a 90 minute little jam. Yeah. I highly recommend it to anyone who's looking for a nice watch. And I feel like deeply connected to River Phoenix for some reason. I don't know what it is. I've always like been very fond of him, and obviously he was in like Stand By Me and different movies like that, but you watch it and you're like, oh, what could have been? You know, what a career. Anyways, Connor, do you have a dose of drama?
Oh my God, River Phoenix never would have dropped out of a big budget gay romance film like Joaquin did. I'm just gonna say that. I'm just gonna say that. My dose of drama, I'm feeling dramatic about if Ragtime does not move on to Broadway or another off-Broadway space, whatever, it needs to continue for more people to see it. So I'm begging producers, investors, the powers that be, the universe to continue giving this gift of this specific production of Ragtime to the masses because people need to see it, whatever form it may live on in. So feeling dramatic if it's
Fingers
if last
crossed
time
because
we
I want
see
to
it.
see
I
it.
know, I know, I know. But anyway, Ben, do you have a dose of drama?
Tenor Napalm opens November 27th, and there are 12 performances from that date to December 15th. Theater is the backbone of this city, and there's so much incredible work being done on Broadway and, you know, in Uptown right now with Ragtime, Hills of California. Maybe Happy Ending, I hear, is phenomenal. Go see all of it, be a patron, and also just know that there are incredible artists in every borough of this city and at every scale of this city, and that it takes people prioritizing it to go see it. It's not going to come to you. And if Tender Napalm and the type of work that we're doing there can be your entry point to going to see the other incredible work happening in the city, I think we can build that artistic community that we know is possible, right at home. And for in a much more accessible way. So that's my tea.
Love it. When you say 12 performances, that makes me feel like, oh my God, like get your tickets while you can. Like that is, it's urgent.
They're moving. It's a 60-seat house, you know? So if the moment you hear this, hopefully this episode airs soon enough that you can still get it. But
Oh
even if
yeah.
not, it was a pleasure speaking with you, and everyone who didn't see it missed out.
Oh yeah, we're gonna make sure this is out with enough lead time for everybody.
Yeah.
Wait, where is it happening in New York, by the way?
Theater Lab, West
Okay.
36th and 9th.
Oh, easy.
Stone's Throw. It's a beautiful white box, very abstract and surreal, and you'll get lost within the first 5 minutes into a completely different world
Oh.
and come out better for it, I think.
Well, we cannot wait. And just hearing the way that you've spoken about it, I think that it's a necessary piece for right now. So thank you so
Yeah.
much for chatting with us, Ben. This was truly a treat because Connor and I are fans. And also, I'm excited to be able to see you on stage soon.
Yeah, thanks, y'all. This is such a pleasure. I really appreciate the time.
Yay. Where can everybody follow you online?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram. It's Ben, and my last name is Ahlers, Ahlers. There will be a lot of updates both about Tender Napalm and everything else. So we'd love to see you there too.
Awesome. And while everyone's following Ben there, they've got to follow us. We're at the Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I'm at Dylan McDowell. Everybody needs to see Tender Napalm. We'll include all of the ticket information in the notes below. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.
Drama.